Okay, so good to see everybody. I'd like to call our meeting to order. This is the June 15th, 2020 Water Utility Commission meeting. And we're starting at 5:01 p.m. So thank you everybody for joining us. This is our first, for my part, hopefully only online meeting we're going to have. But we'll see how that works out. This will, online meeting helps us to meet the social distancing requirements that we're under and also ensures that the community can participate in our meeting if they want to. So that said, I'd like to call on Danielle to do a roll call, please.
Chair McMillan?
Here.
Vice Chair Reynolds? Commissioner Hollingsworth?
Here.
Commissioner Hurt?
Here.
Commissioner Merritt?
Here.
Commissioner Milkey?
Here.
Commissioner Tuskinson? Thank you.
Daniel. Again, thank you for everybody joining us remotely for this meeting. The mechanics of this meeting is going to be a lot the same of what we used to, and a little bit different. I'm going to go through some instructions on how the meeting will be a little different, just so everybody has clarity and is on the same page. We're going to be going through the same agenda items. We may be moving at a slightly slower pace than we're used to, just to make sure we get everything done correctly. And all of our votes tonight will be by roll call, since we won't be able to do our usual just voice voting. So when the time comes for a vote, we'll do a roll call voting. So in order for one to participate in this meeting, you must be logged into Zoom directly with your computer or by telephone. For those who are unfamiliar with Zoom software, let me give you a quick primer on how it works. Everyone's microphone, other than myself, Peter's, and I believe Danielle's, will be muted normally. This will help us to ensure no one gets talked over and we know what everybody's trying to say. So with that being said, we'd like everyone to hold questions until I give you basically the word that it's time for somebody to speak and ask questions and make comments if they'd like. And at that time, I'll be asking you to raise your hand. And that way, each person who wants to talk will have the ability to do so and be recognized so we can, everyone can see what's going on. Danielle will turn on your microphone when it's appropriate for each person who wants to speak to actually speak. And I'll do my best to let you know when that time is. If a member of the public wishes to address the commission on any agenda item during the call to the audience, again, please raise your hand only when I announce it's appropriate to do so. There are two ways to do this. You can do so with the participants icon on Zoom. If you click on the participants icon, this will open the dialog box that lists all participants in the meeting. You can scroll down until you find your name and select your name. And once your name is selected, a second box will pop up where you'll have the option to raise your hand. You can also participate by phone. And if you wish to raise your hand by phone, you can do so by dialing *9 on your phone. Again, please wait to raise your hand until the appropriate agenda item has been announced. And after I announce the opportunity to raise your hand, otherwise we will not be able to discern which topic you wish to address in relation to the agenda. Our aim is to proceed in a timely and efficient manner. A little more complicated than we used to, but we'll work through this. Once your hand is raised, Danielle will be alerted to your request to speak. And this applies to both commission members and members of the public. So please raise your hand if you have a question or comment after I announce the appropriate time to do so. At the appropriate time, I'll ask Ms. Tanner if there's any hands raised to provide questions or comments or then announce your name, and Ms. Tanner will unmute your access so you can speak. Please make sure you're also not muted on your own personal device. As with all commission meetings, please clearly state your name and whether or not you're an Moore Valley resident, a member of the public. Speakers typically are limited to no more than 3 minutes, although that time can be extended if necessary. So with all that being said, our first item on our agenda is call to audience. So I'm going to ask now if we have any members of the public who would like to address the commission. So it looks like we have none, Daniel.
No, we didn't receive any blue cards, and I don't see any raised hands.
Yep. So with that, I will close the portion of our meeting and call to audience. And we will move on to our regular agenda. Before we do that, there's been a request that we do a change on our agenda, so we're going to do that. We're going to move agenda item number 7 to item number 6 and switch item number 6 to item number 7. So just reverse those, 6 and 7. Okay, so let's proceed on to our first agenda item. Let's review and approval of the March 9th, 2020 regular session meeting minutes. Does anybody have any comments or questions on the minutes? If you do, please raise your hand. Okay, it looks like we do not have any comments or questions on the minutes. With that being said, do I have a motion on minutes? Please raise your hand if you have a motion. Commissioner Hurt has a motion.
Yes, I move adoption of the minutes as written.
Is there a second on that motion? Mr. Merrick has raised his hand.
I second the motion.
Okay, we have a second. Are any other comments or questions from anybody? Like to raise your hand. Seeing none, we'll ask Daniela to do a roll call vote on the first on the motion. Can you hear me, Daniel?
Chair McMillan?
I vote yes.
Commissioner Hollingsworth?
Yes.
Commissioner Hurt?
Yes.
Commissioner Merrick?
Yes.
Commissioner Mielke?
Yes.
Thank you.
Okay, Daniel. Okay, item number 2 on the agenda, update and discussion on the activities of the water utility in the last 90 days. Director Peter.
Thank you, Chair McMillan. There we go. Now you should see on your screen the cover for our first presentation, the update and discussion on the activities of the water utility in the last 90 days. Does everybody see that? All right. Well, it's nice to see everybody again. You know, we had to cancel our field trip that we had planned for this spring, and we also canceled our May meeting due to the COVID experience. But thanks to technology and a very a technology up-to-date commission. We're able to meet virtually, so it's very nice to see everybody, and I can't wait until we can see each other in person. Next slide, please. So with respect to the water utility and the COVID-19 response, the Water Utility Administration, Conservation, and Engineering, we primarily telecommuted from home for the month of April. We had full access to our office electronic files and programs. Our information technology group did a great job of setting us up such that we had access to all of our electronic data and programs from home. Twice a day, we had mandatory team check-in meetings. This was, we're just like how we're meeting now. Twice, we'd meet at 10 o'clock in the morning and 3 o'clock in the evening. And just everybody kind of do a good of the order and go around the room, and everybody would give updates on what they were working on and any questions they had. And it worked out really well. I think we came away from it realizing it was a great benefit. For example, folks that, for example, I think Danielle really saw a benefit because she got to hear the conversations between, engineering and the inspectors. And, that way when those papers came across that needed to be processed and invoices and requisition requests, it really gave context to all those things. So we found it was a really good communication tool. What we did allow was for office staff had shift schedules. So if you did need to come into the office, you had a 2-hour window in which you could do that. And that worked out well. We have some staff that they wake up very early. I mean, I think we had a shift schedule from, 5 to 7, and then the next shift schedule would be, 7 to 9, and so on and so forth. So if you needed to come in, you would just come in during your assigned shift schedule. So the overall goal was to limit the number of people in the office. I was told to try and limit the number of people to 4 to 5. And by telecommuting with our administration and engineering group, we were able to achieve that. Water utility customer service, we were able to have a shift schedule for our customer service staff. And what really helped out there was not having them having to serve walk-in customers. So for the month of April, the door was pretty much locked, and we provided service to our customers, telephone, internet, mail, the Dropbox, all those other methods of communicating with our customers was utilized. We rotated our office reporting of customer service staff to 1 week on, 1 week off. So basically we had half the staff come in for a week and then they'd go home for a week, and the secondary crew would come in, or the second crew would, so it was one on, one off. And what the town did is they provided 80 hours of COVID leave. So if there wasn't work for you to do at home, or maybe you didn't want to do work at home, you could use the 80 hours of COVID leave. We felt it was really important to not use that and to preserve that in case it was needed in the future. We realized we had projects that customer service staff could work on at home. And we took advantage of that and took care of those nagging little projects that you never seem to get around to. We got around to it. Probably one of the more beneficial projects was we had an off-site storage facility where we had shelves and shelves and shelves and boxes and boxes and boxes of files. And the 1 week off staff would go to that storage room and go through those files and relocate them here to the office to be gone through at a later date. But overall, in the end, we were able to empty out that offsite storage, and now we don't have that anymore. So that's a savings of about $4,000 or $5,000 a year. So when it was possible. The customer service staff that were on their 1 week off were performing work that they could do off campus. Water operations, the water operations group, they didn't miss a beat. What we did there is we permitted them to take their work vehicles home. And instead of having their morning meetings where they report to work at the production facility, they receive their work orders just electronically. So they went straight from home to their assigned areas where they had work to do. The supervisors would just rover through those areas where the work was being done to check on staff, make sure they had what they needed, you know, just overall supervisory type duties. So field staff didn't miss a beat. They just went straight from home, performed their work orders, and then back home. Currently, all staff is reporting to work as we normally would now. We're just practicing social distancing. So, you know, if we have to get together in groups, if we have to, we'll wear masks. But for the most part, we're limiting, you know, maintaining social distancing. Next slide, please. So some of the things I was telling you, I was so proud of this group. We didn't, you'd never know that we changed how we did business out in the field. We got everything done we normally get done. In the month of April, we completed our reservoir inspections program. Typically every year, we try to visually inspect between 3 and 5 reservoirs. That way, every, 4 to 5 years, we visually inspected all of them, but that program continued on. We had a water main break April 22nd at 8 o'clock near Star Mist Place. You know, field staff, they showed up just like they normally do. You know, when they were in the trench and confined, or close proximity to each other, they wore masks and just tried to be aware of their surroundings, but didn't miss a beat. They worked through the night and got that water main back in service about 6 o'clock in the morning the following day. Some of the capital projects that we got done and water operations was involved with that was the replacement of our D8 pressure vessel. D8's located on Lambert Lane, north side of Lambert Lane between La Cañada and Oracle Road. Next slide, please. The engineering group and inspection group's been very busy. Capital projects in the month of March and April, they completed the Naranja Reservoir rehabilitation. This is where and here again, this project was identified as a result of the dive inspection work that's done. We prioritize our reservoirs as to what needs to be rehabilitated and when. And Naranja Reservoir was next on the list. So, the whole interior is sandblasted to a near white finish. There was some structural repairs that needed to be made. And then it's lined with a National Sanitary Foundation approved lining. This level of work here, it should provide close to 20 years of uninterrupted service. Next slide, please. Another capital project that the engineering team worked on and the inspection team inspected was our El Conquistador booster station rehabilitation. This booster station was originally constructed to primarily serve which was the Sheraton El Conquistador. It's now the Hilton. The area has changed quite a bit. There's a lot more demand on this booster station. Additionally, the engineering team, when they didn't have made an assessment, they found that the facility was operating quite inefficiently. Enough had changed that the system curve was different than when it was originally designed. As a result of this project, they all things being equal, they doubled the capacity of this booster station and improved the efficiency of it by nearly 50%. So this was a great project. But during the whole COVID pandemic experience, you know, this work was still going on. Next slide, please. Here's another one. We did a well rehabilitation. Every year, you know, the water utilities making capital reinvestments, and our goal is to rehabilitate, you know, 1, 2, 3 wells a year. What does rehabilitation mean? It means we pull the pump, we'll video the well to see how the screen looks, if there's any, you know, tears or, you know, rips, we'll make repairs. And then what we'll do is we do this thing called brushing and baling, where it's kind of like you just put like a big brush in it, you brush the screen, and then you bale it, you clean out the bottom. So basically just give it a good cleaning. And then we re-equip it with a new pump, new column pipe, line shaft, oil tube. This kind of work, you know, the results of this is you should get another 10 plus years of service out of the well. As I'll report later on in the director's report, this work pays you big dividends when you have big demands on your system for, say, I don't know, forest fighting type things that might come up, but really glad we did this work. Next slide, please. There we go. That concludes the report on some of the water utility activities for the past 90 days. Any questions from the commission?
Questions, comments, raise your hand. Commissioner Mayor?
Quick question. With all the changes that you made in April to accommodate the social distancing and those efforts, are you going to take a look back and see if there is any, you know, lessons learned in that after action review that could yield cost savings down the road? And one of the things that stuck out in my mind was sending the vehicles home with the service, with the field employees. I just wonder if that results in cost savings and fuel and miles and things like that.
You know, with respect to having staff take their work vehicles home, you know, we did see an increased cost of the utility in fuel costs. So that isn't something I would typically do. You know, that was the benefit to that, though, was, you know, we were trying to keep our staff healthy so they could provide the service they provide to support our community. But in general, no, I wouldn't want to do that.
Okay, so definitely a cost, not an opportunity. I gotcha.
Yeah. You know, the really opportunities were is, and we're starting to experiment with a little bit now, is just, it's a great, these technologies, whether it's Teams or what other softwares, they're quick and easy ways to communicate with each other and have everybody hear what's going on. So we're looking for ways to implement that. But it's funny, staff very much misses the person-to-person contact.
So Peter, you seem to hint there at the last comments that you're going to talk about the fire's impact on the utility.
Yes, I'll do that in my unless there wants to be discussion on it. I was just going to do it in my director's report, but I mean, or we can talk. I'm happy to talk about it here, so we could have a discussion on it. So, you know, this is very late breaking. It was, you know, a week ago last Friday that we had that lightning strike, and you know, we had the forest fire. Yeah, all the water, as far as I'm aware, all the water you see being used to fight that fire, it is being provided by the water utility. The water utility is part of the, what is the word they use? We're all the different, like, providers were called, like, liaisons. to the firefighting management team, but every morning at 10 o'clock, we use this platform right here and we get updates from the fire service. And then we do a good of the order where all the liaisons will give an update on their areas. For example, you know, Trico Electric, they have power lines in the area that they want to make sure stay protected. Pima County Flood Control, they have rain gauges or gauges that monitor runoff or tributary flows. They've let the they've let the firefighters know where those assets are. Likewise, the water utility, early on, you know, we were seeing every day more and more water trucks. So they were using water truck. They were using the hydrants to fill water trucks, then driving across the street to Catalina State Park to fill their, they call them pumpkins, but they're little portable reservoirs where they would fill up their tanks for the helicopters. But the first couple of days, our system was seeing more and more demand every day as they ramped up their firefighting efforts. And it's stabilized since, oh, I would say Wednesday of last week, it's stabilized and it's been holding steady. But we give updates, you know, how the system's doing. We're working with their liaisons because one of our concerns is we designed the system for firefighting purposes to provide 1,000 or 1,500 gallons a minute for 2 hours. You know, we were sustaining that for, you know, 10 hours, 12 hour days. But the good thing is because of the capital reinvestment we've done the last couple of years on booster stations, rehabilitating reservoirs, wells, also our wheeling stations we have for CAP wheeling, the system handled it great. My big concern was, you know, if we had a, knock on wood, if we had a large commercial fire in the same zone where they were pulling, you know, 1,200 gallons a minute, that was my concern. But we worked with the Forest Service liaison and we developed contingency plans where, okay, you can pull water from here, but if we end up with a firefighting scenario in town in this zone, we need you to stop pulling from here and go to this other zone and pull from there. So really neat. To see the communication that took place and is taking place. And everybody, I would say from nuts to bolts is very agreeable, collaborative, you know, just everybody just wants to know, hey, you know, what can you do? What do you need help with? How can we help you accomplish your mission? You know, we're trying to help them accomplish their mission, but at the same time, they understand, you know, we have a mission here also. So it's kind of neat. It took a couple days to get those relationships established and that communication established. It wasn't like that. In my opinion, Monday and Tuesday was, I was running around with my hair on fire looking for someone to talk to. Once we got those relationships established, it's been great. So every morning at 10 a.m., we get an update like this. We do a good of the order. So it's been good, but with respect to the capital I was talking about, I was really, really glad we made those capital reinvestments because we saw we're seeing the benefits of it right now. The system, it's flexing its muscles a little bit, but it's doing good.
Thanks, Peter. Good updates. Let's move on to agenda item number 3, which is our discussion on the water conservation program. And Fern is going to be giving us that.
Thank you. Everybody can hear me okay?
Yes.
So kind of in keeping in line with Peter on the talk of COVID and those kind of that 90-day period, I'm going to focus on the impacts that it may have had on consumption and our conservation program. Next slide, please. So again, this was looking at a short snapshot in time of March to May. And although the water use did not change substantially, It did increase compared to this time last year. And it seemed to increase earlier than we typically see when warmer temperatures come up. And it definitely coincided with the timing of the closures due to COVID-19. You know, we could surmise that we had a lot of families at home, and this was the reason for the increase. But we also had some really early warm temperatures. We saw almost record temperatures in March, April, and May. So with that comes seasonal activities of pool filling, you know, adjusting irrigation timers and hose watering and all those things that come with those temperature increases. But when we broke it down into single family and commercial specifically, we saw that single family did increase while commercial customers decreased, especially some hospitality industries here with their lower occupancy rates. In some cases, they were using 50% less per day in consumption. But really at this point, we're not really able to draw any, you know, specific conclusion about trends. I think we'll need more time to really determine the impacts, especially, you know, with the late summer and fall brings more uncertainty regarding the pandemics. You know, as Peter brought up, the fire, you know, more temperatures, higher temperatures. So it's going to be kind of a wild ride, I think, for a little while, and need more time to kind of understand all that. Next slide, please. So I also looked at a few metrics regarding the conservation program itself. And of course, audit participation, like many other things, dropped off due to the guidelines of reducing person-to-person contact. Summertime, though, is historically a slower time for water audits. You know, part-time residents are leaving. And it's very fortunate that we're a utility that has AMI, because I am able to complete audits kind of over the phone, and customers were receptive to that. They were very receptive and happy to have somebody be able to talk to them over the phone. With our Conservation Kids program, we were very lucky to have completed all but 7 presentations prior to the closing of schools. Last year, we had 740 students participate, and this year we were able to still reach 533 students. E3, or Environmental Education Exchange, did some live streaming events and put all their classes they teach online. And these classes were offered to all Oro Valley teachers K-5. So they kind of opened that up a bit more, and that was a nice feature that they were able to put in place. They really had to scramble and make it happen, but I think they adapted well to the situation, and we had a successful program year despite that. Water Smart, I really thought that, you know, it was possible that alerts would increase given that families were staying home. But leak alerts really remained at regular levels for this time of year. So we didn't really see a big change there. Next slide, please. I also thought that, well, if people are home and they're on their computers, well, then maybe they're registering on WaterSmart more. We didn't really see any significant changes. But we have over 5,000 active registered users. With single family residential having the highest registration rate over commercial and multifamily, of course. And just some additional information, 58% of our registered single family customers are in tier 1 of our rate structure, which is 0 to 7,000 gallons for a 5/8 inch meter, which is a common meter in our service area. Next slide, please. The graph that's showing right here, it's showing a slight increase in portal visits. This graph reports portal visits by the week in thousands. And it's a little light there. That graphic is a little light. But it breaks them down, the visits, into first-time visitors, which is that kind of dark blue running along the bottom of the graph. And then repeat visitors with the light blue and make up the larger portion of the graph. We had over 15,000 visitors in the March to May timeframe. Now these can be repeat visits. We saw portal visits increase slightly and really rivaled some of the number of visits when we first started the portal back in 2018. On that far left there, we had over 2,000 visits when we first started the portal there. We've been at just over 1,500 visits per week. That drop that you see in the line on the right-hand side of the graph is because I took a snapshot at that data before the week was complete. So that's why that kind of looks a little funny there, but we're basically at about 1,500 visits. And again, that's slight rise could be a seasonal trend. We started in the fall of 2018 with this. We have a lot to learn and a lot more time to need under our belt to really understand changes. Next slide, please. So what's next for the conservation program? It's pretty an exciting time, really. At our last Water Resource and Conservation Subcommittee meetings, we received some really good feedback and encouragement to gain a better understanding of how our customers, especially single-family residential, use water. And so pending final budget adoption, we are looking to estimate indoor-outdoor water use by conducting an AMI data analysis. You know, industry standards in water, they generally use an estimate of 50 to 60% of people's total water use is put on their yard. But really, that is just a broad estimate. They lack a lot of good data behind that. And a lot of assumptions go with that number. So getting hard data is very important to determining this type of information. And so it's a benefit to the utility, the conservation program, and ultimately our customers when we know more. So it'll be an interesting project if that is actually, budget is actually adopted. We also really want to increase communications with our customers regarding the utility as a whole and water conservation. I mean, we have some good things going on and projects happening in the utility. Peter highlighted some of those and you know, sharing this information with our customers is an important step in to connecting with the community that we serve. So we're currently working on two communications, kind of slash informational type of publications. The welcome letter, to me, it's kind of more of a hybrid document. It's in a newsletter format. It's welcoming new customers to the utility, but it's informational like a brochure. And we provide a little history to give them some context about the utility. We're encouraging them to contribute to our commitment to protecting our water resources. We're encouraging low water use landscape and providing links to resources. So it's kind of a nice bundle of information for a new customer coming into the Oro Valley Water. but we're also working on the newsletter. Throughout the years, we have had newsletters and they went to the wayside for whatever reason. We're working on that newsletter now, working on the framework for that, and trying to make the welcome letter kind of dovetail nicely with the newsletter. We have a kind of a title, potential title. It's Behind the Meter. So anyway, stay tuned. There's things changing and interesting things coming up. And that concludes my presentation.
Can I ask a quick question on how soon you think the AMI data analysis will be completed, if that's good, that gets approved?
The completed, I would anticipate that probably taking, I would say, between 1 and 2 years. Okay. That might be a lofty goal. But I think we would certainly require time on that.
Just so we'll have an idea of what the time frame was on the budget.
Yeah.
Any other questions, comments? Anybody raise your hand if you'd like to comment? Okay, seeing none, thank you very much for your presentation.
Thank you.
Okay, we'll move on to item number 4, which is a discussion of the 10-year water resource delivery and storage plan. And Peter.
Thank you very much, Chair McMillan. So this discussion and the following discussion, some of you have heard this before, but I think we need to go back and revisit this. It's just a good foundation for us, you know, moving forward with respect to some of the things we're going to need to discuss in the near future. And additionally, I have a guest speaker lined up in September that will be speaking of things that this will provide good context for. I think it'll be particularly beneficial for Commissioner Merrick and Commissioner Hurt. Commissioner Merrick, you've heard some of this at the Community Academy when I presented there, but it'll just be a good overview. I know some of you've been there, done that, you know all this, but I think it'll be just a good refresher for us. So let's talk about the 10-year water resource delivery and storage plan. Next slide, please. So what are our water resource delivery and storage goals? Well, we want to secure long-term dependable water supplies for the town of Oro Valley. Our three sources of supply are groundwater, CAP water, and reclaimed water. Groundwater goal, my goal has always been to limit groundwater pumping with the goal of eliminating annual well water declines. In 2019, the water utility pumped less groundwater than it ever has in the history of the water utility. We saw a lot of groundwater recovery in close to 50% of our wells. But we want that to be the case for all of our wells. So there's more work to be done there. The Central Arizona Project Water, we want to continue to purchase our full CAP allocation. We want to increase our long-term storage credits at our storage facilities where water can be recovered for future use and not just for future credit transfers. And I'll talk a little bit more about that a little later. We're exploring opportunities in emerging water markets that involve transferring water from seller to buyers. There's some emerging opportunities there that we're keeping our finger on the pulse of, and I see that a important part of our future for growing our allocation. Reclaimed water. Our current reclaim entitlements, they're fully utilized. So what does that mean? You know, the Oro Valley does not have its own wastewater system. It's Pima County's wastewater system. So if you look at your water bill, if it's an $80 bill, more than likely $40 of that is the water utility and the other $40 is Pima County wastewater. We have an intergovernmental agreement with Pima County where they take our effluent, they treat it. We give them a portion of it as payment. It has value. And then the rest is ours to utilize. But we utilize, we're almost at a break-even point. We utilize a little more than we're entitled to. So that amount we're over, we have an intergovernmental agreement with Tucson Water where we purchase reclaimed water from them when we go over our allocation. But if, as potable water demands increase, so will our reclaimed entitlements. So we're looking for ways to increase our usage of reclaimed water. We encourage the contracting or the earth moving community to use reclaimed water. We've installed three reclaimed water hydrants throughout the town. So wherever possible, you know, when there's large earth moving projects, we incentivize the use of reclaimed water and we encourage the contracting community to use that in lieu of potable water. Additionally, the town uses reclaimed water in their street sweeping efforts and those sorts of things. Next slide, please. So our water resource delivery plan. So I'm breaking this up. It's a 10-year plan, so we're talking 2020 to 2030. In fiscal year 2024-2025, we expect to bring online our Northwest Recharge and Recovery Delivery System. So you're going to hear me talk about CAP wheeling and NWRRDS delivery. So I designate between the two as wheeling versus delivery. So for 2020 through 2024, we're going to operate our CAP wheeling system at its full capacity. And the remainder of the potable supplies will be groundwater. 2025 through 2030, we're going to continue to wheel through Tucson, our CAP, a portion of our CAP water through Tucson Water System. But then we're going to begin delivery of our Northwest Recharge Recovery Delivery System water. And the NWRDS will give us an additional capacity of 4,000 acre feet a year. That water will be used for further offset the use of groundwater for existing customers, but it's also what's going to support the potable water needs of future customers. We're going to increase our CAP deliveries to offset the additional demands due to growth. And we're going to deliver CAP water in sufficient quantity at Tucson Water's CAVSARP and SAVSARP facilities to continue supporting the terms of our wheeling agreement with Tucson Water. And I'll go into detail on that in my next presentation. So I'll circle back on the CAP wheeling and NWRRDS delivery and some of the nuances between those two systems. We're going to deliver CAP water in sufficient quantity to Kai Farms to support replacing the groundwater pumped from our recovery wells. And the reason I mentioned Kai Farms specifically is in the next slide. With Kai Farms, because it's in what's called in lieu of water, we don't have to pay for any evaporative loss. We just have a 5% cut to the aquifer. So when I talk about replacing the groundwater we pump, I send a lot of water to Kai Farms because I don't have to lose any water due to evaporation. We're going to deliver the remaining CAP water to the Lower Santa Cruz. And the reason I say that is that the Lower Santa Cruz, that's where we're going to be recovering that water we've stored for our NWRRDS project. So we want to make sure we build up enough credits there in case in the future, if there are any CAP curtailments, we have the reserves in place to deliver that that water in lieu of any curtailments that could happen in the future. we're going to continue utilizing and delivering reclaimed water for irrigation purposes. And we support efforts to explore opportunities for future direct potable reuse of effluent. There's a lot of work being done now on, using, making effluent potable again. The fact that technology is already there, it might not be economically priced where we want it, but it won't be too long, and it will be. And then at that point, it's probably more of a public relations effort to make it acceptable to consumers. You know, reclaimed water is a legitimate source of supply, but that would be something in the future. Next slide, please. So I wanted to show here in this table is our water resource storage plan. So if you look at the table on the left, you'll see, if you can see it, you'll see groundwater storage facility. I have Kai Farms, Lower Santa Cruz, Pima Mine Road, and Central Aber Valley. There's others, but this is the meat and potatoes of it. So our allocation is 10,305 acre feet a year. So here again, I'm having to replace 5,000-ish acre feet of groundwater that we pump. So I send 5,400 acre feet a year to Kai Farms. Going down to the bottom, we pump between 2,500 and 2,600 acre feet a year out of CAFSARP or SAFSARP, and that's the Tucson water system. So I make sure I send enough water there to offset those deliveries that we want. And then the rest, I'm sending to Lower Santa Cruz to build up those future long-term storage credits. So what I just went across, and it's, these are just, these numbers change a little bit every year with respect to storage, with respect to evaporation loss. So for example, if you look at Kai Farms, there's no evaporation loss because in lieu of them pumping groundwater, we're letting them use a portion of our CAP allocation. But then in return, we get the same amount of volume of their groundwater for the future if we were to need it. So there's zero evaporation loss there. Whereas if you look at Lower Santa Cruz and Central Aber Valley, 45 and 50 acre feet respectively. So that's an evaporation loss. And then no matter what the facility is, whether it's a groundwater savings facility like Kai Farms or an underground storage facility like CAFSARP or Lower Santa Cruz, all those facilities, you pay a 5% cut to the aquifer. That's just, if I put in 5,000 acre feet, and it has to go through one calendar year. So if I put in 5,000 after evaporation, if I were to put in 5,000 acre feet, but pull it out the same year, there's no cut to the aquifer. But if I want to build up long-term storage credits and I leave 1,000 acre, say I use 4,000 of that 5,000 acre feet, I'm storing 1,000 acre feet. Yes, it's 1,000 acre feet minus a 5% cut to the aquifer in the next year. So what I did is I just went through the years 2020 to 2030, looked at what I thought the demands were going to be, a system between now and then, and just started tallying up what the long-term storage credits might look like. So if you look at the ending storage balance another important thing. So between 2023 and 2024, I'm showing different storage losses due to evaporation and cut to the aquifer with a little different divvying up of where I send the water and basically where I would send the water. So you'll see Kai Farms, I always keep that high just because I don't have to have an evaporation loss. But you'll notice is I'm taking some water that I was going to send to Tucson Water and I'm putting it at Lower Santa Cruz. That's because I'm going to be starting to pump water out of Lower Santa Cruz because of the NWRRDS project. So I'm going to back off a little bit on what I wheel through Tucson Water, make up for that difference. So I'm going to send a little more water to Lower Santa Cruz. And then I made projections as to what assumption I thought would be. Made projections on what I thought the evaporation loss would be and that sort of thing. And so when you get to the end, in storage balances, 10 years from now, you add it all up, and I'm projecting you know, a little over 45,000 acre feet of long-term storage. So that's great. So we're going to prioritize the buildup of long-term storage credits at Lower Santa Cruz. We're going to balance groundwater pumping with CAP wheeling and delivery capacity. So that's wheeling and NWRDS. We're going to continue to take advantage of the Kai Farms groundwater storage facility classification that results in no evaporation loss, which means more water in our long-term storage credit accounts. And 10-year water resource goal, just continue to build up those long-term storage credits. My goal is I'd like to have 10 years worth of long-term storage credits in 10 years. And here again, this is what would firm us, even though we're the highest priority users, municipalities are the highest priority users of the CAP system. You know, if we ever saw cuts to us as the highest priority users, we want to firm us when we pull water out of storage if we needed it. So that's why this is really important. Next slide, please. So graphically, this is something staff put together. You know, there's a lot of numbers that go into generating these bar graphs, but you know, you can see when we brought on reclaimed, you know, there was a time in 2004 we were solely dependent on groundwater using nearly 11,000 acre feet a year, which is completely unsustainable. And then we started bringing in reclaimed water for irrigation purposes, aka golf courses. And then in 2012, our phase one of our CAP wheeling, and then we've had subsequent phases since then. But then you can see what I've done is I've made projections on what I think future consumption will look like. You know, I don't think it's going to be a straight graph like that. In fact, it might, you know, it's quite the phenomenon we've seen since the market crash of 2005. I mean, just if you look at the top of all those bars, overall consumption has gone down and continues to go down. We haven't seen it turn around yet. You've heard me say this before, you know, this is the result of intentional conservation and unintentional conservation. You know, intentional is people are more aware of, we live in the desert. Water in the desert's practically a miracle. So maybe we don't need lawns in the front of our houses and, you know, those sorts of things. And then the unintentional conservation is, you know, if you've bought a washing machine lately, I mean, it literally uses half the water of a washing machine 10 years ago. So Karn's an expert on all these kinds of things. But, you know, I believe we're being conservative in our projections. And that's good because that just means we're going to store that much more water. Next slide, please. So the last slide of this presentation here, I just wanted to show kind of a model, a graphic representation of the words I've said. So if you look at the top, you could think of those as all sources of supply. You know, we have our CAP water allocation of 10,305 acre feet. And these are 2019 numbers as far as consumption goes. So in 2019, we used just under 4,600 acre feet of groundwater, and then a little over 1,700 acre feet of reclaimed water. And those deliveries support demand. So you'll see them, they're going into water deliveries. And that's present. And that's what I call wet water. I mean, it's real, tangible, get you wet water. And then the future wet water is the water utility is a member of the Arizona Water Bank. And in our active management area, which we call the Tucson Active Management Area, we have over 600,000 acre feet of wet water in our Tucson Active Management Area. And that's available for municipalities only. So that's something we've kind of like an insurance policy you paid into. So we not only do we have our own personal long-term storage credit account, but we have a right to a portion of this 600,000 acre feet of Arizona Water Bank water. You'll see here I put a a box called Future Water Leases. This is where I was talking about these emerging water markets. Bear in mind of Arizona's 2.8 million acre foot allocation, only 1.6 million acre feet of it's actually CAP. There's 1.2 million acre feet available to what we call on-river users. And you can think of that as Arizona agriculture, typically in the Yuma, primarily in the Yuma area. As the price of water gets more expensive, we're having discussions with agriculture, and I think we're going to, maybe in the future, we're going to get a lot skinnier because it's more profitable for them to sell their water rights than it is to farm. So there's emerging markets there where we might be able to enter into a 50 or 100-year lease for additional water allocation. So some interesting things going on there. With respect to these water credits, you know, there's certain rules that the Arizona Department of Water Resources, there's certain rules we have to follow to keep the aquifer whole. It's not always wet water related. Sometimes it's credit related, but nonetheless, it's important. The water utility is a member of the Central Arizona Groundwater Replenishment District. And what that means, if you look, we're going to take a little, if you go up to the far left where it says CAP water, you see some of that water going towards deliveries. Oh, there we go. Thank you, Christian. You'll see, yeah, go down. You'll see it says replace groundwater pumped. So Christian, keep your hand there. I love that. So if you look at the groundwater, we delivered 4596 acre feet, but we're replacing it with 4596 acre feet of CAP water. So we're physically replacing in our active management area the same amount of groundwater we pump. Now, we do that because this is the most economical model. We don't have to do that. We could pay the CAGRD to replace that water on our behalf. The reason we won't want to do that, because if we use a portion of our allocation to replace the groundwater we pump, it's $200 an acre foot. If we pay the CAGRD to replace it on our behalf, it's $600 an acre foot. So this model represents the most, it's a combination between the most responsible and the most economical way of delivering water. So that explains the CAGRD. They'll replace water on our behalf. And then finally, we have what we call a groundwater allowance account. We have this savings account of water credits to where, let's say I didn't want to replace the groundwater we pumped with a portion of our CAP water. And let's say I don't want to pay the CAGRD $600 an acre foot. I could take that water out of our groundwater allowance account. The utility started out with about, I think it was 75,000 acre feet of groundwater in our groundwater allowance account. Before we had reclaimed, before we had wheeling, we were doing a combination of paying the CAGRD and using our groundwater allowance account to replace the groundwater we were pumping. Our groundwater allowance account got down to, I think it was, don't quote me on this, I think it was around 8,000 or 9,000 acre feet. So there was nearly a decade there where we were really running down our groundwater allowance account. But we had to do that because we couldn't afford to pay it all forward through the CAGRD. Over the last 4 or 5 years, we've been purchasing, you can build up your groundwater allowance account by purchasing what's called extinguishment credits. It's all paper stuff, but we look for opportunities to purchase those. So we've built up our groundwater allowance account from round numbers here, I think from 9,000 acre feet. I think now we're back up to, I think we're back up to close to 25,000 acre feet. So making progress on trying to restore that account. So this is overall kind of shows the model of how we're utilizing our resources and where our resources are. If you look at the bottom right there, I just provide, this is based on projections I've made, and they're conservative projections. I estimate that a town build out which, you know, depending who you talk to, but according to my model and look from a water resource perspective, town build out is in about 10 years. And we should be using about 8,300 acre feet a year of potable water. I plan on pumping less than 5,000 acre feet of groundwater a year, probably a lot less than that to be at a truly sustainable groundwater pumping rate. The goal, enough water, we have enough water resources to continue replacing the groundwater pump with CAP water while still storing water for future use. I see this as a very sustainable model. Here, if you look at town build out, you know, 8,300 acre feet a year, and we have a CAP allocation of 10,305 acre feet a year. If there are no curtailments, even at town build out, we're still storing water. And if there are curtailments, we have room to shoulder those curtailments without dipping into our long-term storage credit. So I feel very good about this operating model. And that is the last slide. And with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions. Was that understandable? Okay. Well,
you did a great job of trying to explain a very complicated system.
Oh, you know what, Chair McMillan, can you go back a slide, Christian? Or go back to my model, can you go backwards? Chair McMillan, I added this box because you and I had a discussion one day, and it was with respect to conservation. Thanks, Christian. I look at conservation from a model perspective as a source of supply. So Karin, your job's real important, and you get a box. So you and Chair McMillan, you and I had a conversation one time, and you said, well, where does conservation fit into this? I said, that's a good question. And I really do see it as a source of supply. You know, water saved is water earned. So that's how I show it.
And personally, I'm looking forward to potentially seeing that box grow bigger. However, only time will tell what the numbers tell us, what's possible and what's not.
Well, as Karin touched on, we're really ramping up our efforts on the conservation front and really on getting the metrics so we have an idea of what's working and what's not working, so we can focus our energy on the things that are working. There's a lot of rules of thumb in our industry, but we're in a great position because of the technology we have and the metering capabilities we have. If this turns out to be how Karin and I expect it to be, Oro Valley Water Utility people will be coming here to see how we do what we do. No one else is doing the kind of work we're proposing. So very exciting.
Yeah, it is exciting. All right, any other comments, questions for Peter? Okay, so thank you, Peter, for that. Let's move on to item number 5, which is discussion on the 10-year cab wheeling delivery plan.
So thank you, Chair McMillan. So here, you know, we were talking about water resource utilization. So now we're kind of digging a little deeper in like, how's it getting here? So we're gonna talk a little bit about that. And what it really has to do with is we're gonna talk about CAP wheeling and NWRRDS delivery. So wheeling is utilizing someone else's infrastructure to get your goods and services to you. Delivery is different because we're utilizing our infrastructure to do it. So that's how I call one wheeling, one delivery. They're both bringing CAP water here, but I want to make sure it's understood by two similar but different mechanisms. Next slide, please. So our water wheeling and delivery goals. The 10-year CAP wheeling delivery plan shall achieve the established water utility goal to limit Oro Valley Water Utility's groundwater production to more than 5,000 acre feet a year. And that's regardless of how much growth we receive and regardless of any future annexations and growth. A measure of success in this position is if we can get our groundwater to a truly sustainable pumping rate with recovery in every well. That's my goal. We want to create a roadmap for importing additional recovered CAP water into the service area to achieve the town's groundwater production limit goal. Another important thing, blend recovered CAP water with existing groundwater supplies to improve water quality in terms of hardness and total dissolved solids. So, one of the things is surface water, it's higher in hardness and TDS. If any of you are like me and you grew up in this town, if you remember the old evaporative coolers, you could get your evaporative cooler going in May and those pads would last you all the way to September. It was all groundwater. It was relatively shallow, but as we went deeper for the water and brought in other sources of supply, you need to change your cooler pad now after a month. It turns into flagstone. It's hard water. It's not bad for you. In fact, there's some literature out there that says it's actually good for you. But anyways, it's an aesthetic issue. But we, as much as possible, we try to blend our CAP water with groundwater to have a homogeneous TDS and hardness throughout our system. We want to develop a 10-year planning roadmap for the water utility to implement a phased and prioritized wheeling and delivery plan. And we'll talk about that more with some of the next graphics. Balance CAP wheeling, deliveries, and groundwater pumping to achieve our utility goals. So next slide, please. So what I'm just showing here is this is actually some of the data that goes into the bar graph that I showed you on the previous presentation that showed groundwater, reclaimed water, and CAP water. And I just wanted to show here is, every year I do a groundwater projection, CAP projection, reclaim projection, and you can tell when I became the water utility director from when I'm comparing actuals to projected. And every year as I get actual numbers, I just put them in. And because I want to see what is the divergence between the projected and actuals. And that might help me be able to model more accurately in the future. But just want to show here, we look at water resources. And then this column goes on. I mean, there's 20 more columns that goes into this body of work. But basically, on my hydraulic my resource utilization model here, basically I'm at town build out between 2029 and 2030. That's why I just stopped there. And you can see if you look at the blue column of groundwater use, add the CAP column in the green, you get 8,500 acre feet a year, and that's around about what I said we would be at town build out. So just want to show you the kind of the body of work that goes into tracking this sort of thing. Next slide, please. So right now we're recovering a portion of our stored CAP water, and we're utilizing Tucson Water's infrastructure to wheel that water to our service area. Last year we wheeled about 2,500 acre feet, our IGA with Tucson Waters for 2,600 acre feet. My goal is to just get us right up to that 2,600 acre feet with our existing infrastructure. And it's our existing infrastructure, it's running, we're not holding back on it. We're running it as hard as we can. We have four CAP wheeling stations. Our very first one was at Naranja in the upper left-hand corner. And then as the commission knows, we have a satellite service area we call Countryside around Linda Vista and Camino de Oeste. We have a wheeling station there. And then also We had another one at Kaya Buena Vista and our latest one at Oracle and Hardy. Next slide, please. And then the subsequent slide, we're gonna compare them side by side. So, but here in 2024, I say we're gonna start delivery utilizing the Northwest Recharge Recovery Delivery System. You'll see there's a combination still of CAP wheeling and deliveries. So if you look on the west and northwest portions, you'll see that I have deliveries at Shannon and Lambert, Shannon and Tangerine, and Moore Road and King Air. So that's really so we're bringing in that water on the west side and we're moving it through to the east. But the NWRDS, we don't really have a good way to get to the south side of our system. So we'll maintain that wheeling agreement with Tucson Water, you know, at Oracle and Hardy, Kaya Buena Vista and Countryside. And we would also keep our Naranja wheeling station active. The next slide, please. So here I'm just showing side by side. If you look at the left, that's our current wheeling scenario. And if you look to the right, that's our wheeling slash delivery plan. The way our system is designed at these locations, we have good transmission main sizing and distribution sizing. We can move the water pretty easily throughout our system with the boosters and reservoir system we have. That is going to conclude this presentation. Any questions? Well, I hope that was a good review for the commission. I know for some of you, this has been there, done that. In fact, I think for some of you, you were there. You were a big part of providing the support necessary for council to permit us to enter into these agreements. So Commissioner Mielke, were you here for that? Yeah, great. Now, Charlie, I think you were around, but you weren't on the commission then, were you? Yeah, so Commissioner Mielke, this must be really neat for you to see us talking about a body of work that took place 15 years ago.
Very, very satisfying, and I'd also point out that Winston's been around for the whole duration also.
Yes, yeah, yes. Unfortunately, he couldn't be here with us tonight, but Winston's been great. But, you know, thanks to the vision of staff and the support of the commission and making there's risk versus reward. This is a big deal doing this, and you having your faith in staff and making the recommendation to council, and council having faith in staff and their commission that this is the right thing to do. Look at where we're at. I mean, the lowest groundwater production in the history of the water utility. Amazing. So thank you. And thanks. Thank you very much. So that's all I have.
I have one quick question. I was just curious. A couple of years ago, we had to do an update with Tucson Water on the cost of wheeling water to us. I was wondering when we were scheduled to start looking at that again as far as future costs.
Okay. It was hard for me to understand. Were you talking about perfluorinated compounds?
No. A few years ago, we talked to the city of Tucson about the cost of wheeling water to us. I was wondering when we have to do that again.
We have to do that again in 2 years. No, actually, no. I'm sorry. We don't have to go back for an IGA. I think it's in 7 years. I think it was a 10-year IGA.
Great.
So what I do right now is every year, the IGA gave the water utility director the authority to have those negotiations, and it didn't need council approval. So, but every year we work with Tucson Water in establishing that rate.
All right, thanks, Peter.
Thank you.
Okay. very helpful as usual. We're going to move agenda item 7 now up to number 6. The next item is discussion and possible action on cancellation of our July Water Utility Commission meeting. The background on that is typically in the summer, staff, believe it or not, like to take vacations. And so it's usually a pretty good time to give staff a break and let them take a break for a month. So that's the background behind this. Is there any discussion or questions on this item? Raise your hand, Peter.
Can someone tell me where I can go? All of our plans have been canceled on us. But a staycation is good too.
All right, if there's no comments or questions, do I have a motion from anybody? Please raise your hand if you have a motion.
I'll move the cancellation of the July meeting.
Mr. Milkey has moved to cancel the meeting. Any seconds? Commissioner Merritt.
I'll second that.
All right, we have a motion and a second. Any other comments? Raise your hand. If not, I'll ask you know your roll call vote.
Chair McMillan?
Yes.
Mr. Hollingsworth?
Yes.
Mr. Hurt?
Yes.
Mr. Merritt?
Yes.
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you, Daniel. Okay, we're going to now move to item number 7, which is the old item number 6, which is discussion on staff's recommendation and town council's decision and feedback made on the June 3rd, 2020 meeting regarding water rates. Peter is going to talk to us again.
Yes, thank you, Chair McMillan. So I'd asked Danielle to amend the agenda because this is something I think we need to, you know, circle back with the commission on. The last time we met, our recommendation, the commission's recommendation and staff's recommendation to council was a $1 base rate increase to the potable water customer, and that's for a 5/8 inch meter, which represents 88% of our customers. In addition, we staff and the commission had recommended a commodity rate decrease to the reclaim customer of 12 cents per 1,000 gallons, as well as a decrease in the groundwater preservation fee of 10 cents per 1,000 gallons. And this was based on work we had done with a new cost allocation model for the reclaim system. That isn't what happened. And very, very close to the day of the public meeting, I was asked, due to the COVID-19 pandemic and the stress, placed on the community, is can we forego the potable water rate increase this year? Mary Rallis and I huddled in the corner and went through our numbers. There were some things that had changed that let us be able to come from a place of yes. One is the town manager's recommendation for no merit increases for staff, and that because the water utility is an enterprise fund, that resulted in cost savings to the water utility. Additionally, typically when we make these kind of projections, we're conservative in what we think our revenues are going to be. So typically we bring in a little more revenues than we project, and typically we spend a little less than we project. Additionally, because of the support we've had from the council in the last 2 years with respect to base rate increases. We got $1.83 2 years ago, $1.81 1 year ago. It's really helped us preserve our cash reserves and not deplete them nearly as fast as we were. Because of that support we've had, the conservative nature of how we do our budgeting, we were able to say, yeah, we can forego this year, with the caveat that, you know, next year might have to be, if we were, the five-year performance showed that next year was roughly another dollar base rate increase. Although we've been, when we get to it, it's typically been less, but, you know, it might need to be more than what we project. And that was understood. And so this was literally the day of the meeting kind of discussions. So I went into the meeting knowing that that was going to be my recommendation, which, so I don't want you to think like at the last minute I changed my mind and disagreed with the commission or the body of work we've done. It was because of the COVID-19 pandemic and concerns for the community's well-being. So went into the public meeting. I did touch on the body of work that staff and the commission had performed, expressed the appreciation for the commission, talked about what the recommendation was going to be. And in my presentation, I then switched into what the recommendation was. And it was due to the hardships realized by the community from the COVID-19 pandemic, we recommended no potable water base rate increase. But we recommended a decrease to the reclaimed commodity and groundwater preservation fee. The council, I think, was very appreciative and accepting of my opinion of the potable, you know, not having a potable water base rate increase. And then discussion went into the reclaimed rate decrease. There wasn't a lot of discussion about the decrease in the commodity rate. Discussions centered around, should we be decreasing the GPF? And where it stems from is, you know, before we had a single reclaimed customer, the potable water customers were paying the debt service on the reclaimed system. And to this day, the reclaimed or the potable water customer pays, you know, a little over 80% of the debt service for the reclaim system. So the discussion centered around, you know, is that right? And I had expressed to council, well, this is how we came up with that, you know, and the guidance we're given through water policy. There was some discussion. And another thing, bear in mind, I personally didn't bring my A game to that meeting. By the time we got to the water rate discussion, I think it was close to 11 o'clock at night. You know, I think that's like an 18-hour day at that point. So if you go back and listen to it and I look like I'm punch drunk, I was. I don't know how much fight I had in me. But the discussion centered around really the GPF and the general direction was, we're not going to do that. Come back to us next year. Let's look at that again. So at the end of the day, no potable water base rate increase, a reduction of 12 cents per 1,000 gallons for the reclaimed commodity rate, and no decrease in the reclaimed GPF. So just wanted the commission to understand, these changes came up very last minute, very quickly. It was very dynamic, you know, making sure that we could do these kinds of things and keep the utility financially healthy. And with the answer, we were able to come from a place of yes. So one of the commissioner, the staff, and I know your council is very appreciative of the work the commission does. It's held of high value. I'm going to speak for myself. I don't think it was hard. It was late and I just feel like we didn't, I feel like I fell short on giving the commission the recognition they deserve, but I just want you to know that I do appreciate the body of work this commission does, and I'm excited for the work we're going to be doing in the future. So just wanted to give the commission some feedback on that. So that's my perspective.
I'm not sure, Peter, that you're being a little hard on yourself. But the bottom line is, whether or not you had your A game, my take is it wasn't going to happen anyway. So I don't think that you should, in effect, say it was my fault. No, I don't believe it, Peter. I'm sorry. I'm not going to buy that one. What I do think is you got put between a rock and a hard place, and you did the best thing that was available to you at the time. But I don't buy that somehow you failed the commission, or that you somehow did not convey what we would have liked to have seen done. It just didn't happen.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
Yeah, I think the outcome is reasonable, especially considering as we went through all of our rate deliberations, there was no knowledge of this coming economic squeeze or whatever. I would just observe in passing that I think it might have been better to put the decrease on the GPF rather than on the commodity rate for the reclaimed. Probably take 15 minutes to explain all the reasons why, but it's a little, the money collected in the commodity rates just can be used a little more flexibly. So if one wants to sort of protect the overall water utility budget, it might be better to do it that way, but it's done and I don't think it'll do any harm. Thank you.
Commissioner Mayor.
The only comment that I had is, working for a large regulated utility, I realized that the term excellent finance and excellent utility are relatively synonymous. I think it probably was a good decision this year, given the financial position that the utility's in. However, when you challenge your funding source, if that's not recoverable in the next years, then there's a net negative impact on the things that the utility is able to deliver 5 or 10 years from now. And I think that a lot of the things you stated earlier, the stability of the system during the massive water draws, during the fire suppression, as well as the other activities that, like you said, are perhaps best in practice, that becomes less and less possible if funding becomes scarce. So like I said, probably a good decision for now, but definitely something we need to keep our eyes on for next year.
So the only comment I have is, it gives me some comfort knowing that Peter pointed out to the town council that before we have a big increase this year, that we may actually need one next year that's slightly higher than we anticipated, depending on how things go. So keep good meeting minute notes, Peter, so you can bring that back up next year and sometimes if you get pushback on that issue. Do you have any other comments for Peter? Questions? Okay, thank you very much, Peter, for that update. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
All right, our next agenda item is town council meeting communications with Councilmember Keene.
Yep. Thank you, Chair McMillan and commissioners. So I'm going to do a little piggyback on something that Peter mentioned in the previous commentary that he was doing. And I wanted to do this as a council report, not speaking to the agenda item. But the council meeting was very, very long. And it was one that we had a lot of content. And I just want to say, as I sat here and I listened to him compliment the commission, I was remiss in sharing that at that meeting. It was very long. And I have full faith in the recommendations that the commission has always done, and I support it clearly. And so I just want to say that I can't speak for the council, but I am going to say that I do believe that everybody feels very strongly about the information and the recommendations that come from the commission, and they're greatly appreciated. This is a very complex commission, and the work that comes from this body is extremely important, and I will tell you, very much appreciated. So thank you. And the good news is that we reevaluate the rates every year. So next year, I'm sure that will be something that will be done. So with that said, thank you to all of you. And if I was remiss in not sharing that during that meeting, it wasn't because it wasn't felt. It was just kind of a long meeting. Can you imagine 5 hours on a Zoom meeting? We're doing like two right now. So I'll shorten it. So where we're at now is the budget study sessions have been currently taking place for the years 2021. We are scheduled as a council to potentially approve the tentative budget on this Wednesday's council meeting, June 17th. So if you'd like to watch that, that will be this Wednesday. We will be talking about the cap on the budget. And then July 15th is when we are slated to make a decision on the budget. So those dates are very important as we move forward. Some things that I wanted to mention that are important. We've been working through this COVID environment, and I want to commend everybody for doing the Zoom meetings. It's challenging, and we're all in a new learning curve. So thank you for that. The COVID, one of the things that happened is the emergency proclamations and subsequent amendments that have been done by the mayor. We did have a council item last week where we wanted to know, are we in sync with the governor's proclamations and amendments and also with Pima County? And it appears that for the most part, we are in line with the governor's proclamations and amendments. So just want to let you know that. And we're going to continue to work through the COVID and follow social distancing guidelines as they are presented. And then the other piece that all of you know that's come up is we've had the fire. And I want you to know that Peter gave a great summary on the water usage, but one of the things that's happened that a lot of people don't know is our police chief, along with our fire chief, Chief Carr, have been very good with their meetings and their communications for the town, and so that will continue. So I believe we're all in very good hands when it comes to the communication from our leaders in that regard. And the other thing I just want to say is I think while council is, we're working very diligently and we're working in the best interest up until every step is a new step along the way, but we're working really hard and we're going to continue to do that for the best interest of our citizens. So I just want to share that with you because we don't get to talk as much as we normally do. So I wanted to share that, and I am going to have to sign off early. So since I won't see you in July, I wish everybody to stay very healthy as we still navigate through this time. So thank you, Chair McMillan.
Thank you very much for that.
Pardon?
Appreciate those comments.
They're heartfelt.
Okay, so we'll move to the next item, subcommittee Commissioner reports, do we have anything from our finance subcommittee? There is a hand on that. Any comments? As far as the water resources and conservation subcommittee, we have nothing to report on that either. So we can move on to our next agenda item, which is water resources usage by Peter.
Thank you, Chair McMillan. I'll make this quick. You know, here, looking at next slide, please. You know, here we're just looking at water consumption by types for both our main service area and our countryside service area. You'll see, looking at that last bar graph on the right, what you're looking at through April, and we're comparing up through 1999 through April. So we're comparing the same time frame. Again, you can see that overall declining trend from 2006 to 2020, but you'll see there's a little bump up there. And when we get to countryside, we'll see a similar thing. And, you know, like Karn had alluded to, we think it's a combination of two things. One is that we rolled into summer pretty quick. And we'll also see that reflected in the upper basin states and the snow melt. But it got hot pretty quick. And so water, people tend to use more water when it's warmer. And additionally, even though we saw during the COVID-19 stay-at-home order, we saw commercial consumption go down, but residential consumption went up. And we have a lot more residential customers than we do commercial. So I think it's a combination of both that we're seeing that little bump up there. Next slide, please. And here, same thing with countryside, very, very similar. I don't think I've ever seen it where countryside and our main service area don't trend the same. And that completes my report.
Peter, so... Item number 11, director's report.
Okay, let's wrap it up here. Director's report, next slide, please. So, you know, the next two town council meetings, they're Zoom meetings, they're at 6 o'clock. We have one June 17th and one July 1st. And we canceled our July 13th meeting, so let's keep our fingers crossed that we can see each other in person and reconnect in August. And then in September, I have a guest speaker planned for the commission that I think you'll find very interesting. But yeah, so Danielle, do you have it handy there when our August meeting would be slated for?
Let me check. Hang on 1 second.
Is that August 10th?
Yes, it is.
August 10th. Well, stay tuned. Hopefully we'll be meeting in our newly refurbished Hopi room on August 10th. Otherwise, we'll do it this way. Next slide, please. Oh, yes. You were waiting for it, right? So here again, if you look at that dark blue line, it represents, so we're looking at here is the snowpack for the upper basin states. The dark red line is the median. You can see compared to, you know, last year we just had that big, big peak at the top there. But, you know, we had a good 2020. Here again, as you see it really drop off fast, that's reflective of that early heat. When the heat comes on strong, there's less runoff and more evaporation. So that's why you see the water year 2020 drop below the median value. Is just it got hot really quick, and we lost a lot of water due to evaporation instead of runoff. But overall, we're well above the curve. If you look at the Bureau of Reclamation projections, there's no shortage projections for the Colorado River users this year or next year. So that's good news. And now we start the whole thing all over again. But we had a good, we'll take it. You know, we didn't have a, as good of a year as we did in water year 2019. That was just amazing. But we're above the curve. Next slide. That concludes my report. Thank you.
Very good news. Any comments, questions for Peter? Okay, if there are none, we'll open it up to call the audience. Don't see any audience members. So we'll close that. Any future agenda items anyone would like to see discussed? Okay. If you could get items, so we'll move to adjournment. We'll have a motion. Please raise your hand. Commissioner Hurt.
I move adjournment.
Commissioner Hurt moves adjournment. Do you have a second? Commissioner Merritt.
I second the motion to adjourn.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. We'll have Danielle do a roll call vote.
Chair McMillan?
Yes.
Commissioner Hollingsworth? Commissioner Hurt?
Yes.
Yes.
Commissioner Mayer?
Yes.
Commissioner Mulkey?
Yes.
Thank you.
Hey. Well,
thank you, everyone. We had a great meeting. Peter, would you like to make a comment?
It's really nice to see the commission again. Thanks for your support. It's great to see you, and I can't wait for another prosperous fiscal year. Also want to thank, you know, Mary Rallis and Lee for giving me the information I need to make these meetings and our public meetings successful. And Danielle and Christian, thanks for setting this up. I mean, this went like we did this 100 times. So Christian, you didn't miss a beat. Thank you. And Danielle, thanks for getting the commissioners together. I appreciate everyone's efforts. So thank you.
That was great. Commissioner Hurt.
Danielle, thank you.
Very well. Thank you, everybody. We'll see you in August.